You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer, and joining me today to talk about the results of the 2019 Wall Street Journal Times Higher Education College Rankings is Ellie Bothwell, our acting rankings editor, and Sita Bardwa, our student editor. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Thanks for coming in today, guys. Ellie, I'd like to start off with you. I think a lot of people might be confused by the number of rankings that we're actually putting out and wondering what's different about this one as compared to, for example, where U.S. institutions would rank on our World University rankings. So how is the Wall Street Journal Times Higher Education College rankings different from other ones that we produce?
Yeah, so our World University rankings cover research-intensive universities across the globe, and U.S. universities do really well in that table. But we sort of decided a couple of years ago to launch a new U.S. Focused ranking that would be much more about teaching and about sort of student learning and student engagement. We cover teaching a little bit in our World University rankings. You know, that is one of the sort of five pillars that we look at. But, you know, by and large, it's really looking at the kind of research performance of universities. This ranking is different. It looks at other metrics around sort of how engaged students are with their learning. It looks at the kind of diversity of a classroom. It looks at the sort of outcomes that an institution sort of produces for students and graduates. So it's quite a different focus from our other tables.
Outcomes in the sense of jobs?
One of the outcomes is graduation rate, and then we also look at graduate salary and loan default rate. Mm-hmm. But those are sort of value added metrics. So we collect data essentially on the characteristics of students when they start at an institution, and then we look at to what extent the university has sort of improved the chances of that student once they graduate. And by doing that, we make sure, you know, we don't penalise universities that have kind of lower income students or you know, students from quite diverse backgrounds.
Okay, so we're really looking at the individual before and after of individual students at each university. It's not just if we're looking at, for example, salary outcomes or loan default, that would obviously benefit students who come from wealthier backgrounds and graduate from wealthier institutions. We're really looking at where students start and where students end on their own individual journeys.
Yeah, exactly. And we also, part of the reason for that as well is because obviously the sort of success you might have, say, in terms of salary will really depend on the kind of subject you do as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, it might penalise arts and humanities institutions mm-hmm. quite a lot if you just looked at graduate salary. It's really about the value added. And that's something that, you know, a lot of other rankings don't do. You know, a lot of US rankings look at things like graduate salary, but there have been, you know, concerns in the sector that this kind of doesn't really fairly represent the sector.
Mm-hmm. Ellie, you mentioned a student survey, but Sita, I'm wondering if you could just explain a little bit more about who was surveyed, how many students were polled in this year's results, and what exactly they were asked.
Yeah, so the student survey makes up the bulk of the engagement pillar, and it was taken by more than 200,000 respondents across the US. And the questions covered include things like the resources that are available at each institution, how challenging the course content is, what the campus community is like, as Ellie mentioned, questions about graduation and sort of salary and things like that. So it's really asking the questions that students and parents will care about when they're looking to choose university in the US. Seven of the questions are included in the ranking, but there are other questions that we're going to look at in more detail in the student section of the THU website.
And Ellie, you said that this was a rankings that really is trying to put students at the heart of compared to the World University rankings that we produce. So Sita, I'd like to hear from you how you think students and parents could use these results. What sort of decisions could they make based on the data that we're presenting today?
So because the ranking is focused more on teaching rather than research output, it kind of provides a more in-depth look at which universities are going to provide the best teaching for students. So in that sense, it's sort of looking at the student experience a lot more rather than the kind of overall picture of the university. So,
if a student, for example, was looking at these rankings, they could log on and they could maybe look at different institutions based on their teaching performance. They could do it based on. They could compare institutions based on different metrics.
Yeah, exactly. And the metrics are slightly different from the World University Ranking. So as we sort of said, that they are a lot more about teaching, about the resources that are available for students. Another thing that's included in this ranking is whether a student would recommend their institution or not, which hearing from other students of what they think of their institution is really important for prospective students when they're looking for their future university.
Hmm. Ellie, you mentioned that this ranking is looking at four different pillars: engagement, outcomes, environment, and resources. The results have been revealed. Can you go into what some of the top performers are in each of the different pillars?
Yeah. So the resources pillar, I guess, is the kind of one that is most like some of the metrics we have in the World University Rankings. But instead of looking at research resources, it's much more looking at, you know, whether a university has the money to effectively deliver teaching. So, you know, it's kind of important data, I think, that, you know, students and parents would want to know. So that looks at finance per student, faculty per student, and research papers per faculty as well, to get a sense of kind of research-led teaching. And so a lot of the top universities on that pillar tend to be the sort of name brand universities, California Institute of Technology, Harvard, MIT, Princeton, they sort of top this mm-hmm. table. And, you know, they tend to be the most well-endowed universities. So
that's what you would expect to see.
Yeah, it's not necessarily surprising there. Mm-hmm. Then we've got outcomes. So as I mentioned, that's about value-added graduate salary, value-added loan default rate, but also graduation rate. And we also look at academic reputation in there. Just teaching reputation from our academic reputation survey. And again, quite a few of the universities there are sort of universities you would have heard of. So Duke University tops that pillar. Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Columbia, MIT also do well. We've got Dartmouth College, which is a really strong liberal arts university that does pretty well there too. But then when you look at the engagement and environment pillars, that's when you start to see some universities that aren't necessarily included at all in our World University Rankings, or if they are, they'll be much lower down because they're not necessarily research institutions. So under engagement, which, as Sita mentioned, is mainly based on the student survey, mm-hmm. you have a lot of religious universities do really well on that pillar. So Dort College tops that. We've got Oklahoma Baptist University, Cedarville University in Ohio, Texas Christian and Brigham Young, which is the Mormon University in Utah, also do really well. And I think part of that you know, might be because these are colleges that really kind of foster a sense of community. They have a lot of students on campus. They focus a lot on things like character development and leadership, and kind of, you know, it's not just about the teaching, it's really sort of developing you as a person.
So that's quite interesting that these religious institutions are scoring so highly in the engagement pillar, because a lot of the questions that we ask in the student survey are things like, do you feel inspired? Do you feel challenged? Sita, are you surprised by these outcomes?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm surprised, because as Ellie mentioned, they are very good institutions at fostering a sense of community within the student body. I think they really help to develop you as a person. There is that real sense of, a real importance on personal development, which I think students will really engage with. And as the pillar is about student engagement, I don't think that that's too surprising. And plus, sometimes there are smaller institutions as well, which I think within smaller institutions, there is a higher sense of community.
Hmm. And Ellie, our fourth pillar is environment. What does that one look like?
So a lot of Californian universities do really well for environment. So we've got University of California, Irvine tops this, California State University, Northridge, and San Francisco State University also do well. I mean, nearly all of the kind of top 20 actually are filled by California universities, and a lot of them are state institutions as well. So I think that just reflects the diversity that you have in a state like California, you know, large sort of Hispanic and Asian communities living there. And just to remind you, so the environment pillar looks at student diversity as well as staff diversity. and also the proportion of international students and student inclusion, which is about the sort of share of students who receive Pell grants.
Sita, from your knowledge of what's important to students and what you hear from interacting with students, you've got an army of student bloggers, you run our Uni Advice Twitter feed and Instagram feed, so you're really in touch with students quite a bit. What would you think of these four pillars? Which one do you think will resonate most with students?
I think the engagement pillar in particular, because obviously that is the view of fellow students, and I think hearing other students' perspectives is really, really important when students are looking to choose university. I also think the environment pillar is quite an important one in terms of looking at diversity and looking at the proportion of international students. I think that is something that students are really interested in. It really develops the experience that they will have while they're at university, and particularly if you are a student from a BME background, that's something that you would look at to kind of know that you'll have a community when you go to university. So I think in terms of the pillars that students will really, really engage with and they'll find the most useful, it's probably going to be engagement and environment.
Okay. Sita, you'll also be doing some content around this data throughout the coming year, looking at different slices of it to really give people some granular insights into what we found with this massive data set with 200,000 students responding to our survey and then all the other data points that we've collected. So what can we look forward to seeing on the student side?
So as of today, we've got the best public universities in the US, the best liberal arts colleges, and the best private universities. So those are the three sort of biggest cuts that we have. And then going forward through the rest of the year, we have the most recommended universities, which again, that's a really important one, the most academically challenging universities, and the most social universities as well. So all the things that students really, really look to when they're choosing a university. And obviously the US is a very big place as well, so we do break down by the best universities by different states. So we've got best universities in New York, in California, Florida, Texas, so all the sort of bigger states. And then on top of that, also looking at the best universities on the East Coast, the West Coast, the Midwest, and the South. So lots of different tables and things that students can use to compare and get kind of the best university for them.
Great. Ellie, would you do us the honors of revealing the top 10 of this year's 2019 Wall Street Journal Times Higher Education College rankings?
Yes. At number 10, we have the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Number 9 is Princeton University. At joint 7th, we've got Duke University and Brown University. At number 6, it's Stanford. Number 5, the California Institute of Technology. Number 4, Columbia University. Number 3, Yale University, which has risen 3 places this year. At number 2, it's MIT. And at number 1, for the second year in a row, is Harvard University.
Great. Well, you can find all of those results and more from this year's rankings, as well as different slices and the top scores in the pillars that we've discussed today on timeshighereducation.com. Sita Ellie, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
I'm Sarah Custer, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.